You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Take back the streets. It doesn't matter whether or not the person that is accosting your son or daughter or my son or daughter, my wife, your husband, my mother, your parents, it doesn't matter whether or not they were deprived as a youth. It doesn't matter or not whether or not they had no background that enabled them to have to become socialized into the fabric of society. It doesn't matter whether or not they're the victims of society. The end result is they're about to knock my mother on the head with a lead pipe, shoot my sister, beat up my wife, take on my sons. So I don't want to ask what made them do this. They must be taken off the street.
Well,
that's number one. There's a consensus on that.
There is a consensus on that. And that is a very strong statement. Did you recognize the voice? Thank you for joining us. This is October 20, 2022. We're on the air live on Rumble.com. You go to Rumble.com, enter in the search engine, Larry Connors, USA. That'll take you to our live page. You'll see other Rumble postings. Push the button live. You join us in studio. And remember, every program later is posted as a podcast at LarryConnorsUSA.com. That voice demanding that we have more control of our streets and get the crime off the streets, get the criminals off the streets. We don't want them roaming the streets and beating and bashing on people at will. We need to control them. We need to put them away. That was a speech to the Senate in 1993 by Senator Joe Biden. Yes, yes, the same one who's now president. But in 93, Biden, and so did Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and others on the Democrat side, said we need to get control of crime in our streets. There was no talk of defunding police at that time. No one would have dared utter those words. Look how far we've come from 93 until now. This administration is doing everything it can, and with the help of George Soros and his rogue prosecutors across the nation, turning victims into bigger victims and turning the guilty into victims as well. Oh, we can't really punish them. That would not be fair. I mean, and it's a racial-based concern as well, which, by the way, Joe Biden in his remarks later gets into that point as well. And what he says, they're now trying, the Democrats are trying to just, can it just go away? He's talking like somebody from Jim Crow. My God, make him go away. He's talking about somebody like from the Klan. Well, we're not going to let it go away. We're going to expose it in more detail before we wrap up today's program. You do not want to miss that. Which, by the way, today Biden said he would support the use of federal funds to help women afford abortions. I want to stress to you that Joe Biden, again as a senator, voted for the Hyde Amendment, which would prohibit any federal dollars being paid for an abortion. Now, they get around it, Planned Parenthood. They take federal dollars for utilities, leasing a building, buying property, equipment, but not the actual abortion. But now Joe Biden is on record as saying, I will support the use of federal dollars to help women afford abortions, the abortion itself, he said, and I'm publicly urging companies to help do the same thing. Just another twist and turn in political circles. We're also going to get into that part of that debate between Rubio and his challenger, Congresswoman Val Deming, about their battle over abortion. You don't want to miss that. That'll be coming up the next hour. And later, we're going to have retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood from the Heritage Foundation joining us. He's an expert in military affairs and certainly in the Marines. He's putting out a paper that says, if the Marines do not veer from the current course, they will lose things that differentiate them from the Army. And basically, it comes down to the Marines have a choice, transform or die. And actually, what he points out is already being reflected in our other military branches as well. A lot to cover. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning. You're sneezing. It's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Run, run, run with a railroad when their backs are turned. Run, run, run with a railroad when their backs are turned.
Run, run, run with a railroad.
Get out of their sight.
When the engine turns, then you gotta move on. And
you gotta move on at night.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This is intentional, James. Release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to keep oil prices lower ahead of the midterm elections. We don't know what happens after the midterms, and we don't know how dangerous it is to be keep depleting this. We are at the lowest levels in the Strategic Reserve since 1984. Your reaction?
Yeah, this is supposed to be a reserve to deal with a crisis. There is not enough fuel. There is something preventing gasoline from getting to market. This is another purely political effort. The press secretary probably didn't know this was coming because they got a new poll saying inflation is still the top concern and therefore sell down more of the reserve. So it is not part of a strategy to drive up production. This isn't saying we're going to release more and then next month new supplies will come online. It's just let's get past the election. It's so irresponsible. Not what this was created for. And I don't think voters are going to buy it either.
I don't think voters are going to buy it either. We have told you previously that you watch before the midterms, Joe Biden will again authorize release from our strategic oil reserves. You heard Maria Bartiromo as she was discussing that with James Freeman, the Wall Street Journal editor. We're the lowest since the 80s. And it's not going to get better until you start putting it back in. But we're not having any intent of doing that because everything we're getting right now is going to be coming from Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, maybe, and we're going around begging for oil when I repeat to you again that under your feet in the continental states and offshore, we have an estimated 300 to 500 years supply of natural gas, oil, and other fossil fuel possibilities. Once again, this all started on day one when Biden moved into office, canceling the Keystone Pipeline, which was getting close to completion. and he just shut it down. They're still in areas where they were building the pipeline, pipe just laying out on the side of trenches that may have been dug or areas where they're going to be digging. It's just there. That would have been giving us 800,000 barrels a day from Canada. But no, we want to move away. We're going to worship at the altar of climate change, which means we got to get rid of all fossil fuels. And if the people suffer, let them suffer. Let them pay the higher price. Oh, but we've got an election coming up. Well, let's find a way to make it a little easier. Let's massage things a little bit. That's what Joe Biden is doing. So Peter Ducey raising that question to the White House spokeswoman, which is a real character in herself, and almost looks like she's brought in from stage left and had no idea what she was supposed to do. But the question being, if inflation, as Biden keeps saying, that's my priority, will oil and gas prices and everything tied to it are adding to inflation and the crippling of our economy? The question, answer.
President Biden's top domestic priority is inflation. Why doesn't he have more to show for it?
So he's been very clear about making that his number one economic priority. And he's done the work with congressional Democrats.
But who exactly thinks the president is doing a good job on inflation?
We understand that there are challenges that are in front of us here in this country. That is why the president has taken action to lower costs. Republicans in Congress refuse, they refuse to be partners with us on this.
There's a new villain right there, Biden now saying it's the Republicans. It was Ukraine-Russia battle. It was the oil companies gouging. And it's the Republicans not helping us. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, he's got a response to that. Senator Cotton.
Well, guilty as charged that Republicans in Washington have refused to spend trillions of dollars we don't have. Joe Biden and the Democrats don't have an answer on inflation because they're the cause of inflation. There's two main reasons we have this inflation at generational highs. The first is Democrats have spent trillions of dollars that we don't have. It was completely obvious and predictable. In fact, it was predicted not just by Republicans, but by Democrats like former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, that spending all that money would lead to inflation. Yet the Democrats kept spending it, even after we had record high inflation. Just a couple months ago, they spent another $700 billion. The second reason we have so much inflation is the price of energy is so high, because it doesn't just hit families in their budget when the price they pay for gasoline is high. It drives up the cost of manufacturing. It drives up the cost of doing business. It drives up the cost of transportation. And that very much is an intentional policy. The Democrats want energy prices to be high because they want to end American production of fossil fuels, oil and gas and coal.
That's right. They want to get rid of all of it. Now, listen, that might be the future. And by the future, I don't mean 20 or even 30 years ago. You're probably looking at 60, maybe 100 plus years when we do not need any fossil fuel whatsoever. You have the Democrats pushing electric vehicles. That's your answer. I told you yesterday about a guy in Wyoming that bought an electric vehicle. And then he was going from, I want to say from Casper to Cheyenne, if I remember right. And he said that trip took him originally, the first time, almost 17 hours. 17 hours. He had to stop and recharge and then find a place where he could recharge and then wait in a line because others might be there and there's no other place to go at that point. And he did another trip and he got it down to 14 hours. I guess he got availability. He could move around a lot quicker. But here's the difference. You take a gas vehicle, by this man's estimates, and he's made the trip himself before he bought an electric vehicle. You take a gas vehicle and travel the speed limit, not exceeding it. That same trip would be done in 2.5 hours. I can't wait for some Democrats in an anxious moment to get somewhere. We got to charge. We got to trickle and trickle. Oh, we've been here an hour. In a service station, you're in and out 15, 20 minutes. Oh, if you got kids with you, granted. Granted, you're going to have to wait because they're going to go in. They want to see and buy everything. And but you're going to have to usher them back out or hopefully stop in the middle of the night while they're sleeping. But the other push that they keep forgetting, they want to get rid of all this oil and coal and gas because they want to go electric. You know our main source of generating power in the U.S., what is doing that right now? How they charge that electric vehicle? Coal is primarily the fuel to generate electric power. Coal-fired power plants, all being used to burn the combustion, then converting water into high-pressure steam, producing a turbine that produces electricity, blah, 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 blah. I'm not a scientist, but I can read, and that's what it's indicating. And we all know that's how it does it. Now, you've got hydroelectric. You can put dams on various rivers. You'll get some. We have some already. We have nuclear power plants. But we still don't have enough either one of those. And wind turbines. And then you got solar ray panels. But then you got to get rid of the solar ray panels. And getting rid of those panels when they're no longer of any good is like the wind blades. How are you going to get rid of these things? They're more dangerous to the environment than simply drilling and getting oil and gas out of the ground, out of our ground. So we'd rather go to Venezuela and get oil and gas from them, which is a dirty production down there. They do not care about the climate. And all the money's ending up going to the Russians, the communists. When you start looking and breaking down some of this and trying to figure out, as you heard the question a moment ago to the White House spokeswoman, if this is a priority, what do you have to show for it? Well, we don't have, because the Republicans won't work with us. And you heard Senator Cotton said, we plead guilty. We're not going to work to continue to spin when we don't have it. I'm going to give you another viewpoint. This one comes from Charles Gasparino. Charles Gasparino is a Fox News analyst, business analyst. And he says if you really take time to look at everything that involves especially energy, Biden, you have to give an F.
I will say this, and this kind of tells you something about the Biden agenda and how difficult it is to balance. On one hand, he knows, his advisors, I know who they are. They understand the whole notion that the oil industry is essentially fighting with one hand tied behind its back in terms of drilling, because environmental groups, as you said, are challenging those leases. The Biden administration, Biden himself, point blank, said he wanted to put out of business the oil industry. They're facing massive regulatory headwinds. He's got to balance that on top of the fact he gets that is purely inflationary. So how do you do that politically? And the only way you can do that is essentially to create a lie that the oil industry is essentially causing gas prices to remain high and to spin it that way. And it's actually pretty pathetic, but it's the only thing left when you got 3 weeks left to the midterms.
Pretty pathetic. I think he nailed it. Because what door can we open? What else can we go to? Where can we point the finger of the blame? It's never inward at the Biden White House and the policies starting on day one. It's never that direction. And the problem they're seeing is that, and they should have known this, the inflation, the cost of gas and oil and so forth, and everything that's associated with it, is hitting the poor the hardest. And it's hitting a lot of Democrat voters to where they've now decided inflation and the economy are my biggest concerns. I told you yesterday about a survey of black women, and they were expecting to get a real big turnout from them when it came to the issue of abortion, listing what they consider prime issues. Not so. 76% to 78% of the black women said, my main concern is inflation, the economy. Now, how am I going to put food on the table? How am I going to pay the rent? This does not bode well for the Democrats here in midterm. And Latinos are in the same situation. If they thought they were going to rely on them, we're all going through it. Now, if you're really rich, it may not affect you that much. But Gasparino said, when I start looking around and talking to those in the know, there are a lot of Democrats that are already saying, this is a hellhole.
I will tell you this. I spent a lot of time with Wall Street CEO types. Last night, I met with a bunch of them. There wasn't a man or a woman who didn't say that the Biden economic policy, particularly as it involves The oil industry is not absurd. It is these are Democrats, a lot of them. They are saying that all the incentives are pushed against the oil companies, and they can't believe that the United States of America is begging Saudi Arabia and Venezuela. Why is it more, you know, efficient and more green energy forward to get oil from Saudi Arabia and Venezuela than to drill it here? If you think about
it,
we're still using the same amount. We still have needs. The needs are being met not by us. It's being met by overseas. The Biden administration, the environmentalists make you think that if you drill more, people will use it more. Well, that's not necessarily the case. We use it to meet demand based on the type of economy we have. If you drill more, that doesn't mean necessarily you're going to use more. All we're doing here, because we're going to use the same amount anyway.
Keep all your options open. Keep them all open.
But all we're doing here, Neil, because we need the same amount, basically, right, is get it from overseas and make the cost higher. That's all we're doing here.
And make the cost higher. Which brings us back to Arkansas Senator Republican Tom Cotton, as he makes it very clear, the Democrats in game.
The Democrats want energy prices to be high because they want to end American production of fossil fuels, oil and gas and coal. They may not say it in the 45 days before an election. They may rely on gimmicks like releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is also dangerous to our national security. But mark my words, on November 9th, the Democrats are going to go back to openly waging war on American oil, gas, and coal.
The military community often faces challenges transitioning into the job market due to a general misunderstanding of how military skills translate to civilian job requirements. Since our beginning, Recruit Military has connected millions of veterans and military spouses with thousands of employers across the nation. Our approach streamlines the job search process to provide you with meaningful career opportunities with employers that value your military experience. Start by creating your Recruit Military profile, including details of your military background, any relevant skills and experience, as well as what you're looking for in a new job. You can view jobs, speak with recruiters, and register for job fairs with one click. We'll take it from there. In fact, we're making the search process more personal by adding a human touch, our candidate success representatives. For over 30 years, our staff of veterans, civilians, and military family members have bridged the gap between military and civilian employment. Take the first step in your post-military career. Create your Recruit Military profile today.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Work, school, grocery shopping, doctor's appointments, the gym, to the airport to pick up loved ones, to the kids' soccer games, piano lessons, out for movie night, to hear your favorite band in the city, over to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and on last year's amazing road trip. Your vehicle takes you so many places. Protect it. When you leave your vehicle, remember to always take your keys or key fob with you and lock the doors. If you suspect auto theft, contact the National Insurance Crime Bureau at 1-800-TEL-NICB. That's 1-800-TEL-NICB, or visit our website at www.nicb.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
KXEN St. Louis.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Based on the price of oil, I've also instructed the Secretary of Energy to purchase, at a very good price, large quantities of crude oil for storage in the U.S. Strategic Reserve. We're going to fill it right up to the top, saving the American taxpayer billions and billions of dollars, helping our oil industry and making us even further toward that wonderful goal which we've achieved, which nobody thought was possible, of energy independence. It puts us in a position that's very strong, and we're buying it at the right price.
We are buying at the right price at that time of March 2020. Now, when President Trump was saying, we're going to fill up our reserve again. We're going to take it right to the top. 700, let me get the exact number. I don't like to throw these numbers around and get careless with them. But the numbers we currently have were at 400 million, and we were up to 750 million barrels at one point. With the releases that Joe Biden has been making, and he's just announced they're going to release another 20 million barrels just in time of the midterms. He just continues to suck it out, and it's not intended for that purpose. We're now down to our lowest since, I think, the 1980s. We're down at 400 million barrels. That, based on current consumption, without any additional oil or gas being produced in the U.S. of A. or being brought in, some estimate that would take us 5 years, maybe four. I don't like being in that perilous situation. And here's the other kicker to this whole thing. When you hear the Democrats talking about, well, Biden knows what he's doing. When Trump was pushing to fill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, oil was at $24 a barrel, and Schumer, Chuck Schumer, the Democrat, said, well, that's going to be a big oil bailout. You're simply trying to buy up all that oil to help the big oil companies. It was going into our Strategic Petroleum Reserve for our national security. Where else are you going to get it? Why not get it from U.S. oil companies? And you know what's going to happen now? To refill the reserves after draining them down on artificial reasons to get votes, Biden's going to have to pay at least three times the amount Trump was willing to do and did do at that point in 2020. Senator John Hovind, Republican of North Dakota, stated the only way Biden will be able to refill it is if we go into a recession. He said, Biden keeps saying he'll buy it back cheaper. Well, because he won't produce more supply, the only chance he has to buy it back cheaper is if our country goes into a recession. Does that sound soothing to you? Sleep well at night with that idea? All my gas prices will be down if we're in a recession, and we'll be able to put more back in the strategic reserve. Unless Biden continues to drain it off, especially as we get past the midterm, and then they're trying to do everything they can to make the public think, we got to go Democrat, we got to go blue in 2024. Senator Hovind again, Republican of North Dakota, saying, you not only hurt Americans with inflation, higher gas prices at the pump, higher prices for everything, energy being a big part of it, then you also put the country into recession, that hurts them again. That is not a solution to get lower prices or energy prices. The solution is, stand back. Here comes the answer. Stand back. You do not know how big this is going to get. And you already know what it is. The only real answer is more domestic production. More U.S. oil and gas operations. But the Green Squad continues to pull the strings, and Biden is just dancing around. And we are headed to a recession if we're just going to get gas cheaper, oil cheaper, so we can start refilling our reserve. God help us if we don't have a natural calamity, multiple calamities, or something else happen that we don't have 4 or 5 years worth still left. We have maybe 18 months. Oh, well, they'll make sure we get to the next election, I'm sure. Other changes are coming for our military. We already talked about that to some extent. My guest coming up says the U.S. Marines have better ship, and I should say, should shape up. They better shape up or they will die. I don't like this story as a Marine, and you as an American won't like it either.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Some car dealers might try to take advantage of you. One quick way to spot it, look at the sticker price. Jay Ackerman told me, especially in these times, he wants to reward the generations of buyers and the new customers. So Ackerman Toyota sells every car at sticker price. No markup. What you see is what you pay. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
Oil smokes that lightning.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Always glad to welcome back retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, 20 years in the U.S. Marines, a military expert for Heritage Foundation. Semper Fi, welcome back, sir.
Semper Fi, thanks for having me on. Well, whoever you got doing your music is aggressively good.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. Thank you. I do appreciate it. Yeah, I like to make sure we have some good bump music and not the standard.
You bet.
I do appreciate it. We need to start playing the Marine hymn more often, I think. So here on, I'm looking at a piece you wrote for Defense One, and the title itself is stark and almost frightening and shocking and depressing all at one time, even if you're not a Marine. But it says the U.S. Marine Corps has a choice, transform or die. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, that's clickbait worthy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah, there's a whole debate going on inside and around the Marine Corps about this thing called Force Design 2030. And the gist of it is that the world has changed, technology has changed, conditions on the battlefield, profound, enduring interests, especially in the Asia-Pacific region, are really under pressure, and that the Marine Corps is inherently a naval service, you know, amphibiosity, those sorts of things. In the past 20 years, it has become more of a second land army. It's got very heavy, ponderous, and that's not what the nation needs. And so this Force Design 2030 is the current Commandant, General Berger, his effort to shift the Marine Corps away from sustained land operations, inherently a second army, and get back to its naval roots. You know, Marines operating from ships, going ashore, very light, very nimble, responsive to America's needs in a very, very difficult environment. You know, the maritime areas.
Yeah, but the whole idea was to land them there, and that's where the Marine part came in. And then, yeah, they're ashore, and they're right. Grunts, and they're going to be there for a time needed, as we did in the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, World War II, you never went to refight that, but you're getting land power ashore from the sea, and then it has to do its thing, right? And so these are land operations in support of naval campaigns. And the Marine Corps has just kind of gotten away from that. So in today's budget-constrained environment, there's only so much money. You look at the equipment capabilities of the Marine Corps and how relevant is that stuff to a very contested, very lethal fighting world. And it just changes need to happen. And so there's some resistance among the retired community in particular to look at the at great achievements of the Marine Corps in Korea and Vietnam and Desert Storm. tanks, lots of artillery. All that was valuable and needed in those settings, but it's also very heavy and logistically intense, and it's hard to move and all that
stuff. Well, let's deal with that, because you point that out, and this is a factor that I had not considered, because I'm not involved in the logistics of moving it. But you're talking about how the Marines have up-armored everything, and they've got all their amphibious ships to land their gear in Iraq, as you said, but they were outweighing the ship. They had more. They were going to sink the ship. They put everything they wanted on board.
Yeah, an expeditionary unit of the size that I deployed went with four tanks. An M1 A1 Abrams main battle tank weighs 80 tons. You got to get that from ship to shore if you're going to use it ashore. And then 120-millimeter ammunition, all the fuel, maintenance support. It's just very cumbersome. You know, it's difficult to do. In today's technology, we can see the utility of anti-armor munitions, you know, Javelin, anti-tank missiles, TOW missiles. And then the other idea is, if you can replace that really heavy, maybe not so useful stuff in the South China Sea with longer range munitions, you know, anti-ship cruise missiles, naval strike missiles.
Over the horizon. Well, we have Marines in the air, flying jets as well, and helicopters, so.
Yeah. All that stuff can be brought to bear, and the point is, you want to deny China full and free use of the seas, and so you've got to project power into a very lethal environment and still cause a problem for your enemy. And so this force design effort is meant to do that. The retired community is not comfortable with it; they're pushing back. But Congress is very much in support, and the Marine Corps is the only one of the services that has a clear idea of what it needs to do, and it's making very difficult choices to make those changes. But as you know, change is upsetting, and some people just don't deal with it very well.
Well, you brought up, you said the only one that's doing it. I mean, the military, the Army, let's say the Army specifically, they face the same obstacles, correct? I mean, they're not doing anything about it? I mean, and the Marines are supposed to do all the cutback and reorganization and... I'm not dismissing my Army friends, but I consider the Marines the premier force, you know, when it talks about this kind of campaign. And again, it's not comparable to the SEALs, because they're a quick action strike team in and out. Our Army was recon, what is it now? MARSOP, I guess. But those are entirely different. That's a quick engagement in and out, do your mission, but not a prolonged thing. The Army is still looking at doing the same thing, right?
Yes, they want to, but if you look at the European and Middle Eastern theaters, inherently land and air power heavy. If you look at the Indo-Pacific, Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean areas, that's inherently maritime and air-centric. And the size of our forces have shrunk to the point where you almost have to specialize in a way. Not exclusively, right? But if you're going to tune your force and land power and army, armor brigade combat teams, striker combat vehicles, and very heavy on multiple launch rocket systems and artillery. It's heavy combat power that, once in place, is really hard to move from an enemy standpoint, right? And it's very, very lethal. So you don't want the Army to be less Army, but the Marine Corps had gotten too Army, and it's not the type of force it needs to be for maritime or naval operations.
All right, so I honestly, I do not know the actual breakout of battalions and the divisions inside the Marines now. I've always looked at it as basically an amphibious unit, but once you're on the ground, you're there. You're the grunt. You're going to stay there until it's complete. Has that been reorganized in itself already inside the Marines?
They have one regiment out of Hawaii called the 3rd Marine Regiment. It's now the 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment. It is trying out different organizational forms. So they've taken one of the regiments of the Marine Corps, said, figure this stuff out. If it's working, we'll share that information with others. But there are other parts of the Marine Corps, like in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and Camp Pendleton, that are still conventionally structured, right? So it's not the whole Marine Corps that's specializing in this area, but you're developing specialized capabilities and using the 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment out of Hawaii as your test bed. And they're doing amazing things with unmanned systems, new weapons, new communications capabilities, and really bringing to light some new ways of warfighting that would be extraordinarily effective against a distributed enemy like China operating in its home turf. And that's not something that you can, if you have a difficult time moving the Marine Corps, think about how much more difficult it would be trying to move the Army to do something like that.
And what's the force count on the Marines now? And are they at strength or below, and do they need more? I mean, where is the strength?
Well, everybody is shrinking in size. When I came in the 1980s and before I had left in 2005, we had 27 infantry battalions. The Marine Corps is at 22 and will be at 21 next year, so shrinking. The Army is also shrinking. It's at 470,000 or thereabouts, but by the end of next year, there'll be less than 450,000. Recruiting is very difficult. The money is not there to support larger forces, and so they're all just getting smaller. So you've got 21 battalions effectively tomorrow, next year, an equivalent supporting number of aviation squadrons that are almost all brand new. MV-22 Ospreys, the tilt rotors, new attack helicopters, new heavy lift air, the helicopters coming in. And so it's just modernizing to beat the band. And these new things are longer range, more effective, more sensor heavy, and it's just some remarkable things that are going on in the service.
All right, in our last 30 seconds or so here, a battalion, I assume, is still 4 to 6 companies, about, something about 1,000 at the time.
It's so, about 800 people, 3 line companies, a weapons company, the headquarters company.
Well, in summation, in the last 30 seconds, you point out again, if the Corps does not transform, we'll die death of irrelevance. But transformation is the DNA of the Corps, and you think that they're going to be able to do it and we'll still serve our nation and protect.
I think it's going to be a better Marine Corps, more effective and greater value. I think they're doing the absolute right thing, but change is hard. But everybody who's looked at all the data, you know, members of Congress, even the other services, the combat commanders, think it's the right thing to do.
All right. Retired Lieutenant Marine Colonel Dakota Wood, thank you for your time, sir.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, Democrats saying look out for voter fraud.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Town and Country, and Clayton.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You heard me say it correctly as we went to the break. I said Democrats are already warning that you should expect some fraud. Well, they're not saying fraud. They're saying delayed election results, which could translate to fraud. Let me break it down for you. Before we do that, let me point out what happened in Arizona, and I hadn't had a chance to spend time on it. As you well know, Katie Hobbs, the current Secretary of State and a Democrat gubernatorial candidate against Kerry Lake, the Republican, just the other day, less than a month before Election Day, under her authority as Secretary of State, they sent out thousands of erroneous ballots to voters less than a month before Election Day. And then the Secretary of State's office issued a statement and stating, according to Hobbs, and she's the one being quoted in it, my office found and corrected a database error in concert with the Motor Vehicle Division, which led to less than 0.25% of voters to be registered as federal-only voters when they should have been registered as full ballot voters. Now, she says that only amounts to 10,000 voters total. You have to riddle me this. I'm not that big on internet understanding computer. I'll be the first to say, you know, I don't get a lot of it. I still don't. And I'm a pilot. I still don't know how the planes fly when you get down to it. Oh, I know, but I mean, some things still kind of defy your thought process sometimes. But riddle me this: with all the knowledge we have now on this, why? How would they possibly mail out something like that? Now they say they caught it in time, and that's apparently the only little mistake. Really. To me, what I've always heard about computers, and for those of you who are more computer savvy than me, and same thing with accounting or anything else, crap in, crap out, are words that affect. So she sent to her office, sent out a tweet, a follow-up tweet just yesterday, saying about 6,000 records are being reviewed, and again, only an estimated 1,000 voters are affected. Well, I don't understand that. I mean, they are 6,000 or 1,000, but they're reviewing 6,000. Early voting, by the way, began last week in Arizona, and more than 3 million are listed on the active early voting list, and they're automatically receiving ballots in the mail. But again, this is Katie Hobbs, who's running against Carrie Lake for governor in Arizona. The Secretary of State in Arizona, she's apparently doing the job she wants to do. Whether or not it's the right job, well, and now she wants to be governor. In the meantime, I'm reading a piece written by Sean Fleetwood of The Federalist, and said Democrats are already telling Americans, expect delayed election results this fall. Left-wing media outlets attempting to downplay concerns over delayed election results and regularize incompetent election administration. And he goes on to say that Democrats throughout the corporate and political media spheres are trying to say in these highly contested states, you might not know your final vote tally until well after November 8th. In fact, during a Zoom call with the reporters last week, the Pennsylvania acting Secretary of State said Americans should not be surprised if the state does not have the final election results on election night. And the Pennsylvania Democrat is blaming any potential delays. Now, they've already told you there's going to be a delay. Now they're saying any potential delay, that would be blamed on vote tabulations, on a state law that says election workers can't begin processing mail-in ballots until election day. Well, that's the law they have there, if that's true. Now, whether or not she says, she adds this delay, and this is her statement, this delay does not mean anything nefarious is happening. Oh, you know, right. Halloween. No, I don't buy that argument. Anytime I start hearing about delays and issues, and I don't care which side of the ballot you're on or which party is involved in overseeing, when there are delays, I want to know why. We're supposed to be better and faster than ever. Now, if they did pass, and I'm sure she's right, that Pennsylvania and 8 other states and D.C. permit election officials to begin processing absentee and mail-in ballots prior to the polls closing, but not before Election Day itself. So on November 8th, they can start counting them, but all these that have come in, if there have been 2-3 million like they're talking about in Arizona, they're going to be mail-in and voting early, then I could see there would automatically be a delay. But then, so what do we need to do? Do we need to say that we will vote November the 8th? We will not know until maybe December 8th who wins in each state, and therefore what? Really? Am I over dramatizing it? Does anything I've said, based on the statement from Pennsylvania and what happened in Arizona, make you feel more secure about your vote? I would urge you, though, make sure you cast a ballot. Be it early or on that day, make sure you vote, all your family, your friends, relatives, vote. Even if some of you are going to cancel each other out, vote. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to take a little closer look at the abortion debate that went on between Rubio, Senator Rubio of Florida, and his challenger, Congresswoman Mel Balling. And I got to tell you, it's some pretty hotly contested remarks, but we're going to have some fun with it. Stand by, Mel Baldemings, I should say.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.